You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
Ladies and gentlemen, you could have been anywhere in the world tonight, but you're here with us in New York City. Are you ready for a cabinet meeting, huh?
So continuing, Act 2 of Pod for Ham. Tonight, we're going to talk about Cabinet Battle Number 1, which has a pretty massive cast singing in it and lots of fun stuff to digest. I'm Lex Friedman.
I'm Christina Grace.
I'm Camille.
I'm Kathleen Showalter.
Great. So, I have many, many thoughts about Cabinet Battle Number 1. I'm sure you all do as well. I will say, when Jason asked if I wanted to participate in this podcast, I was excited because it is one of my top favorite tracks from the soundtrack. Has anybody on the podcast today seen the show?
I saw it in August 2015.
Wow.
And so it's been a little while, but this is one of those moments in the show that's pretty vivid. It's kind of hard to forget.
My understanding is that they're rocking handheld mics during the cabinet battles. Is that right?
Yes. And so they come out, Chris Jackson comes out as George Washington, and he pulls out a wooden box and opens it up. It's like a dueling pistol box, only instead of pistols, you have live mics. And I thought they were props at first. I didn't realize that they were live mics. And Rachel Donner, who does some of these Pod for Ham, she's like, they're live mics. That's part of why it works, because the sound, which I don't think you pick up on the cast album, the sound is a little bit, do you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit scratchier.
Yeah.
Because they're the handheld. Yeah. So he offers it to, I think it's to Jefferson first and then to Hamilton. So it's a very dramatic lead into what might be a very static conversation about policy.
And what's interesting, you referenced that it's like as if they're taking out dueling pistols. The melody, I think it's a piano melody, although now I can't think of it if I'm right or not, but the melody that's running behind this is like an interpretation, I guess, of the melody from the Ten Dual Commandments, right? It's like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 melody running,
yes,
in minor beneath most of the battle.
It totally is.
Yeah, and then it also leads into the next scene, the next song, which is Alexander's son singing in, yes, you know, in French. So you have this great lyrical, that's not the right word, melodic connection of all of those pieces.
I mean, I love this song because it's like you were already referencing, you know, it's a really clever way to get through what could be a pretty dense political scene. You know, let's figure out what financial system we're going to use for the country. And treating it as a rap battle down to the handheld mics feels like a new moment in cleverness within the scope of the show.
Yeah, it's kind of revolutionary. Like, not even kind of. It is high-key revolutionary, right? Like, communicating complex financial policy using the language of hip-hop. Like, that in and of itself is incredible. And then to have it performed as brilliantly as it is just like mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing too, because they break the fourth wall. Chris Jackson comes out like he's an announcer introducing boxing combatants or something. And they're all arguing at the audience. They're facing the audience. And so those words that they're saying in the rap, they're talking to you sitting in your seat in New York in the Richard Rogers. They're not talking to George Washington. They're not talking to the chorus that's sitting in some chairs. They're actually like trying, when they're making those arguments and they're like interacting in the rap battle and they're you know, making asides at each other or like side eye or whatever, they're doing that to the audience, so that it's very different than what comes before in terms of how it's staged.
Right. We're effectively part of the cabinet at that point, you're saying.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are the people they're talking to. And when Alexander is making a point and he's like jabbing the air and you know, he's making eye contact with the audience. Like, sometimes he's staring at somebody in the orchestra, but I was up in the balcony and he was like pointing at us and looking at us. And you have the same thing coming from Thomas Jefferson there. They're actually, when they're kind of shrugging aside to one side, like they're looking at it's specific people. It's not even like they're kind of looking at the chorus. They're not looking at the chorus at all.
What I mean, what I like is Act Two starts and we get to meet Thomas Jefferson for the first time. And he's clearly, you know, I think just the coolest guy in the show by a mile. And he's super jazzy and his song is epic. And then we slam into cabinet battle number one. Like he's ready. He's down for a fight. And it's not at all any of our characterizations of the founding fathers, right? It's like, he is there not to be strictly a statesman or anything else. Like he's there to like fight and to, you know, to, it's a diss track in some ways, right? Like he's braggadocious. He's like, don't act surprised because I wrote it. I like the Declaration of Independence. That was all me. And I don't know. He's like, I just really like that. It's, you've just met Jefferson, and not only like, because the first song he's really just singing, like you don't know, if you don't know David Diggs, you don't know what you're in for. And then when you get to hear him start, I guess you sort of know from Act One, but you know, you get to see Jefferson start rapping, and he's like, he's taking it personally. And it flies in the face of how we have these kind of very stately views of the founding fathers. And I enjoy that dichotomy.
Yeah, absolutely. That don't act surprised, you guys, because I wrote them, never fails to just make me cackle every time I hear it. It's just such a good characterization of Jefferson, and it really sets the tone for the rest of he and Hamilton's arguments throughout the rest of the show.
He has just gotten off the boat. He basically puts his stuff down and goes straight into this cabinet battle, and he is there to fight from that moment, and he doesn't pause. Like, it gives you a real characterization for what Thomas Jefferson is going to be like for the rest of the show, and gives a different kind of foil for the character of Hamilton. And in someone who is less quiet than Burr, here's someone who is as, not frenzied exactly, but who is as intense and as outspoken as Hamilton, but very different.
Yeah, Jefferson is definitely like, he's got that brash, like swagger going on. And I feel like this song does a good job of capturing like, yes, Jefferson is brilliant, but he's also like hella annoying. Like Jefferson and Madison are basically like neener, neener, neener. Like
you don't have the vote.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I look at the current state of politics, which we don't have to get super into, but just like, it's like, I don't know, this seems pretty familiar and true to life to me.
Right. I mean, Madison is Jefferson's hype man, I guess, kind of the Chris Christie role here. And
happier Chris Christie.
Yeah. What I like is that Jefferson isn't just fighting, like he clearly has a sense of humor as written here, right? Like when line you just quote, you don't have the votes, and then he literally is laughing at him. And imagine what's gonna happen when you try to tax our whiskey. Like he has a sense of humor about it, and he's super confident. I think he gets his ass handed to him, but he's super confident.
He reacts in a way visually too, like he gets the sense of humor, because Hamilton does the dance that Jefferson was doing in the previous song. Like the kind of bouncing dance that David Diggs does. Hamilton mocks it on stage during that part that you were just talking about, Lex. And so he's laughing. He's laughing at what Hamilton is doing. You know, when he says, it's the bit about Monticello, like whatever the hell it is you do up in Monticello, he's doing a little dance. He's doing David's little dance. And that makes Jefferson laugh. Like, so, yeah, exactly. You know, you get the sense that he's not, he's quick and he has a sense of humor.
And so now, you know, when Hamilton comes in with his response, right, he starts out like not ready to argue his points, but really specifically to just start insulting Jefferson. Like he's just met him in the previous song. Like he introduces himself, hey, Mr. Jefferson, I'm Alexander Hamilton. Nice to meet you. And then like one song later, like you said, mocking whatever the hell he does in Monticello, and then just lots of insults. And, you know, have any of the other panelists here, have you read the what they call the Hamilton, the book that they put out about the making of the musical?
I have. I'm looking at it right now.
Nice.
I have it right here, too.
Oh, I don't have it. I feel like
a bunch of Hamilton nerds. That's strange.
You know, at one point, and not even in the description of the song, it's really, I think, in when he's writing about We Know, where he says that, you know, when whenever Hamilton feels backed into a corner, that's when his internal rhyme really starts sneaking up, right? And there's a whole lot of that in We Know. And you start getting a little bit of that, of aggressively internal rhyming in this one too, where it's like he's so offended. Like my interpretation from that like pointer from Lin-Manuel Miranda is like, you know, when he's a new, like he's got debts into credit and diuretic, competitive and sedative. Like he's shoving as many in there as he can. And it's like, they feel it very emotionally. Like they are really, they hate each other.
So this is getting to my favorite part of the song, which is like the show's clearest indictment of slavery as an institution.
Yes.
Yep.
And I actually had a question for Kath about this, since you have been so blessed and have been able to see it in person. I was talking with a friend about this the other day, and we were just talking about, this is really powerful moment where, you know, we have our founding father saying, slavery is really, really gross and you should be embarrassed about it. But my friend who had also seen the show said that it read a little bit weird in person because, you know, the actors playing Jefferson and Madison are Black, and Lynn, while not a white person, is, you know, is not Black. So that visual representation, like it made my friend feel a little awkward. And that was something that had never occurred to me. But I wonder, Kath, if you had like a similar feel or like if that crossed your mind at all.
Well, I saw it actually with Javier rather than Lynn when I saw it. And although that doesn't change the basic premise there, I'm thinking about this. What I really remember from that moment is that's the first moment that Jefferson isn't just laughing at what Hamilton's doing. It's the first shot in some ways that actually knocks him back. And so what I remember is really, David really had my attention on him, so that watching when he physically rocks back, that like it clearly was a shot that hit home.
Interesting.
I'm really curious about that, because I didn't think about it at the time, but there's so much operating when you're thinking about the white founding fathers anyway. When you flip, it's a lot to process live, and I didn't go in with any knowledge of the show.
Oh wow!
Almost at all. So I hadn't heard it. I had heard only the White House thing, and I'm going to see it again, and I'm actually going to look for this and see if it bothers me more now.
You know, what is interesting is like obviously the show throughout takes many, many liberties, right? Even while telling a historically fairly accurate story. What I find really compelling about this moment just from the soundtrack is like he's got the chorus on his side, right? Hamilton does. When he says, "We know who's really doing the planting," like the chorus is, "Ooh, like you got him there," is at least how I'm hearing that. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that at least at this time in our nation's history, that's not necessarily the prevailing thought, right? There's plenty of people who have slaves, and then there's plenty of people who don't. But you'd think that you've got some decent North and South representation at this cabinet meeting in theory. But he's got the whole crowd on his side, really, where they're like, yep, he's right. We know who's planting. And so, you know, your argument holds no water, Thomas.
That's really interesting, because he's pitching it here not at the historical accuracy, and he's not pitching it at the chorus. He's pitching it at the audience in the theater who are going to come in theory on, and one hopes on this. I'm sorry. I'm very, it's been a rough couple weeks, right? But they do have that. The audience is screaming and applauding at that moment too. Mm-hmm. It's not the chorus that you hear as much. You're hearing the people around you. Lynn here is talking to the audience in the building rather than the historical moment. It underlies the idea that this isn't historically accurate in some ways, that this is a parable. This is a metaphor for things that are happening in our world right now.
Yeah. Kath, I'm just like, my mind is blown at the fact that you saw this cold. How are you still alive? Yeah. Like, I would be dead in a gutter somewhere.
I wasn't, actually. I saw it with a friend of mine, and I actually think I watched the whole thing with my mouth open, which is
a classy thing.
But I was holding my diaphragm, like, and kind of just kind of, and when we came out of the theater, we both started sentences and we would kind of be like, and then we wouldn't say anything else for like another block and another block. And it was maybe 20 minutes before we actually could get like words out. Cause it really was something that was so overpowering in terms of the sound in the theater. Cause it's coming at you three-dimensionally. And the visuals in the theater and not knowing anything. Like, I had seen just that little bit from the White House. Mm-hmm. And I knew there was rap in it. And I knew Lin-Manuel Miranda. But nothing. I had no expectations.
Wow.
And yeah. I was floored.
Well, that's got to be amazing.
Yeah, and then it was like, oh, I want to see that again. Oh, wait, no, that's not going to happen.
You know, I was on the Pod for Ham from the opening song, right, where in the song Alexander Hamilton, and I was talking about how there's a moment, and then later I read in the Hamilton home where Lin-Manuel says, like, they switched to double time, but there's a moment when Burr picks up the pace a little bit and he says, you know, there would have been nothing left to do with someone less astute. And, like, that's the point where, for me, on my very first hearing of the soundtrack, where you really start to get, this is going to be serious. Like, at first, it's pretty, this is kind of a slow and plodding introduction to the show. If you don't know, I'm guessing if you're seeing the show for the first time and you know absolutely nothing going in, like, you might not even think that the whole show is going to be largely in rap and hip hop, because it's plotting, right? And then it just mm-hmm. suddenly really picks up when we get to those lyrics, and the show does not break after that point. And I have the same feeling, or a similar feeling, I should say, when these Cabinet Battle songs come out. I love both of the Cabinet Battles, and I know that there's a third that was cut that's going to be on the mixtape, and I'm like so eager to hear that.
Cannot wait for that.
Yeah, I cannot wait.
But like the Cabinet Battle tone, like, I think you know you were referencing Kath, how it's just in the show when they're on those handheld mics, but you can tell, even though it's not sonically so different on the album, there's still just a tonal difference where it's really like every other song, right, it's like the suspension of disbelief that's required of all musicals, regardless of what kind of music it is. Like, when they're singing, they're not necessarily singing, right? That's how the dialogue is being expressed. But here they're very specifically doing a rap battle, and I love that tonal shift that this song takes on for that.
Yeah, I also love that the second act starts with What Did I Miss, which is like so much more of a classical musical hijinks introducing a new character song. Yes. And then it slides directly into this rap battle about finance, which is just like, it's so brilliant. Lin is ridiculous. I can't believe he lives on this planet.
I know. It's like, yeah, you live with the rest of us and this is what's happening in your mind. Because it's he takes the West Wing and he makes it crazy raw. You know, someone, I can't remember which of you said this back at the beginning about how this is boring politics, right? And then you have this policy, but then you have it in a rap. But the energy of this whole song is just so dramatically opposed from the actual content. If you just break down what they're saying without the insults.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those songs on the soundtrack where I like realize I'm really like grooving to, and then I think about the fact that I'm just like dancing along to a song about how we should best use our money in a new financial system, and then I have a little chuckle.
Yeah. Although it doesn't say much. I mean, if there's any historical accuracy here, it doesn't say much. I know we talk about today's political scene as maybe lacking in some civil discourse, but, you know, useless as two shits and turn around, bend over, I'll show you where my shoe fits. I wouldn't say any better than where we are today, really.
Yeah, really.
No, I mean, I don't think U.S. politics have ever been tidy, no matter how we get taught them or how we were taught them in fifth grade. It's always been angry and messy. And, you know, I love the fact that people did political songs where they yelled at each other in 1930 and 1860. I don't know what they sound like exactly. And you had these great phrases like where people were really nasty to each other and they lied a lot. Like, it's not like the truth was something people used up until 1973. Well, I suppose that'd be 1972. But anyway, you know, it's not a new thing to be that way. I also find it fascinating that Hamilton ends up being this crazy cutting edge mind in terms of fiscal policy, which, because Jefferson is like all about the planting, and Hamilton is like, oh, let's invent the stock market. I mean, I'm not saying that's actually what he did. I don't understand the fiscal policy enough, but you know, it's disconnecting financial systems from actual products.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have to remember like how young Alexander Hamilton was. Like that's crazy. He was, I mean, they were all so young. And I think we're reminded of his youth when Washington steps in, sort of like the elder statesman, just like as we're all with Alexander Hamilton, we're all getting hyped. Washington comes in. Okay, everyone cool off. Let's have a conversation. And Alex, I want to talk to you about like how to actually be a politician, because it's not just about having the best idea. Like, if only, it's about getting people to like you enough to listen. It's about modulating yourself in different spaces and finding ways through when folks have competing interests. And we get that all in song, through the vehicle of Chris Jackson's like wonderful voice and presence, which just like sets my heart aflutter every time I even think of it.
Truly every single time.
It's also done visually, because all the other characters, well, the chorus is wearing their chorus outfits, but the three main people other than Washington are in like Alexander Hamilton, you guys have probably seen the clips. He's wearing that green, shiny stuff. Mm-hmm. And Jefferson is in red, shiny stuff. But Washington is dressed like a Puritan. I mean, he's like in black with a little ruff. And, you know, he's not dancing around the stage. Like he's much more mature and intense. And I just, whenever I listened to the cast album just before this, I was like, I remember him being more intense than that. So I'm curious, when he's talking to Hamilton, does he strike you guys as being really angry about Hamilton's slurs on Virginia? Or is that something I have in my head? I'm just curious.
Oh, no, I definitely think he sounds super angry. Like even almost surprisingly angry, disproportionately angry. I'm from Virginia, so watch your mouth. Like he really, at least for someone not having seen it, his enunciation and diction are such that I get the sense that Washington is like super pissed. And it's like, I mean, I'm from Pennsylvania. You can insult Pennsylvania all you want. I don't care. But Washington, very defensive about Virginia.
I mean, Washington was a slave owner.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, when we get to this section of the song where we kind of are in the narrative now, I love Madison throughout the second act as kind of not just Jefferson's hype man, but also, I don't know if any of you are video game players, but he reminds me of like in a video game when there's a character that just follows the character you're controlling around, like a non-playable character just wherever your guy's going.
Oh my God.
Giving you Diddy Kong, just like
amazing.
A low key.
Yes. And that's just how I feel about Madison. Like wherever Jefferson is, there he is. And he's the Ed McMahon, right? He's like that guy. He's right.
Oh my God.
But man, that whole, when Jefferson and Madison are super cocky at the end, you don't have the votes. First of all, I love the melody. I love the reference, Grandmaster Flash. Why he even brings the thunder. Like, I love it all. That whole section is great. And then actually, I wish the song almost ended there, because I mean, the Washington scene, to your point, that Christopher Jackson, great singer, but I imagine they'll call for a mover. Like that whole extra part with Hamilton and Washington feels like almost a letdown after the intensity of the battle itself and then the obnoxious taunting from Jefferson and Madison. I just wanted to end there.
You know, and it kind of does, I think, when it's staged, because it's when it's staged, you have the two of them, like everybody's Washington's center stage with Jefferson on. I get my stage right, my stage left confused, on audience left and Hamilton on audience right. And they're facing each other. Like everything is very symmetrical. And until this end part where they're like taunting him and Washington is like left. So the taunting is not happening in front of Washington. He's not there.
Right.
And then the lights go down and Hamilton goes off to one side and he just has like, it's dark. And so the scene with Washington happens off to the side. It's really like another whole scene. It's not connected up in the way that it sounds to me when I listen to the cast recording.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
And also, I mean, Chris Jackson is just such a, I don't even know how to say, have you guys seen the Ham for Ham West Wing?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
For sure.
So then you have a visual, right, of like how he's a bigger guy. And, you know, and he looms over this like terrier that is I saw Javier and he's not as small as Lynn, but like Chris Jackson is an imposing presence. He is and he looms and he's angry. And so it's, you know, he's just got such an impact.
Yeah. I always love like all the Washington Hamilton interactions, because I mean, yes, it's like a way different vibe than, you know, the fun of the rap battle that comes before, but I think like it's just as important and shapes, you mm-hmm. know, who Hamilton becomes or tries to be. I always think that's fun to listen to.
Yeah, I just love that no nonsense, like, well, I imagine they'll call for your removal. Like, that's how it goes. Sorry, young buck.
Figure it out.
Yeah, and Hamilton just like whining, like, oh, they're being intransigent. Like, well, you have to find a compromise. I don't know what to tell you.
I do love that that's how Hamilton whines. They're being intransigent. Like, that's the word he goes
right. Right. That tells you an awful lot about him, right? Because, I mean, not many people are going to throw that into conversation.
SAT words.
How do you think it informs his character going forward? I'm really interested in that idea that you mentioned, that this dialogue with Washington.
I think it just opens up his mind to different kinds of savvy, that it's not just about, again, having the best idea or being able to have like the wittiest quip. Like, okay, that's fine, but if they don't vote for you, you haven't actually achieved anything. And so I think it sort of sets up, you know, some of the backdoor politics that happen, you know, in the room, etc. Wink emoji.
Yeah, he isn't quite as good at it as he is at the witty quip, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Hamilton has matured at all when cabinet battle number two rolls around.
No, sure wouldn't.
Takes him some time.
Yeah. It's hard to learn life lessons. I will say, and this is entirely self-serving, but I find the last line of Cabinet Battle number one a little emotionally trying, because I was called Lex from day one, but I am an Alexander, and my parents always struggled to find a rhyme for my name, so they would call me Alexander Salamander, and I feel like Commander Alexander would have been so much nicer.
Yeah.
So I'm just jealous they didn't come up with it sooner.
Alexander Commander would have been great. You could have had like a little hat.
Seriously.
Oh, who doesn't love a jaunty hat?
Gotta have a jaunty hat.
Okay, well.
That took a turn.
Really getting at the important stuff here, guys. Right. Really getting to the meat of the issue.
Well, if we have covered it all, then I think that's fine. Listen, I mean, I don't think we have to worry, right? I have been impressed with so many of these episodes where we can devote a half an hour to like a 2 or 3 minute song. Like, I think that's pretty good. My thanks to obviously to everybody for listening, and to Christina, Camille, and Kath. Many of us met for the first time. Two of us already knew each other, but that's Gia. But thank you to all of you, and of course to the listeners.
Convince them otherwise.
And what happens if I don't get congressional approval?
I imagine they'll call for your removal.
Sir.
Figure it out, Alexander. That's an order from your commander.